So my name is David Horn. I'm a PhD student under Dr. Bill Rooney at Texas A&M AgriLife. And today we're going to talk about the validation and implementation of unmanned aerial systems in the sorghum breeding pipeline, specifically looking at using them for height estimation. So the importance of plant height in sorghum to phenotype sorghum, if you were to do it manually, or what we'll call ground truth in this presentation, takes, if you had 560 plots at 10 seconds a plot, an hour and a half to do. So it's a very time-consuming thing for individuals to do. It is highly correlated with grain yield. Producers, however, if you have a tall sorghum hybrid, they don't want it, because by the time they get to around to harvesting it, it's going to lodge, and then you have no yield. So in the U.S. grain breeding program, taller hybrids are just not there. So what we wanted to ask is, because of these time applications of ground truthing or getting height estimates by grad students, can we look at different stages of hybrid production in the sorghum breeding pipeline and use UAS in these different stages, but not only using it, can it effectively distinguish between different stages? And so the stages I'm going to refer to here are mainly the early evaluation hybrids, which is what we're going to call the exotic, and then we're going to look at the advanced hybrids, which tend to be our more elite lines. And with these early exotic types, where we have the more variation, the height ranges from, you know, about 1 meter to 2 meters. And so it's a lot easier to see between plot height differences. And then in our advanced lines, we have a lot less variation, where our plant heights only range from maybe 1 meter to 1.25 meters. So a lot less height differences, so it makes it tougher to discriminate between them. And the reason we do it in these hybrid evaluations is because the whole point of hybrid phenotyping is so that you can get large replicated data sets and go across it faster, reduce time. So for our experimental design in 2017, which this data is only showing, we did this in College Station, Texas. We had four tests, which one was the elite, or our more advanced, and then we had three other, what we'll call exotic tests for the early evaluation hybrids. excuse me. The elite test was in two row plots, so we had mainly that was kind of what some of this taller stuff here that's in this picture, and then the other three tests were only one row plots, but each one was replicated four times. So for the elite test, we had 200 entries, and then for the other three, we had 120 each. The height estimates were taken primarily by the rotary wing, so a DJI Phantom 4, and then also with ground truth data. Fixed wing will not be shown here. So to phenotype these for ground truth, the way we do it is we have two different stages. If we're in the vegetative stage here, we look at the apex in the whorl. So apex being the highest point of that bridge where the leaf starts to reach its maximum point, and then we also look at the whorl, see if we can correlate later with the UAV. And then when it's in the reproductive stage, so when stem elongation has occurred and the panicle starts to be produced, we measure the very top of the panicle, and then we also measure the flag leaf to see if there's a correlation between that and the UAV. And we're using a representative mean of the plot, so we'll stand at the front of the plot with a height stick and a barcode scanner, and it's just a quick assessment of what plant height is. And then the UAS estimation, like I said, using a DJI Phantom 4, looking at four flight dates. We had more than four, but for this presentation, we're going to look at 4 to 6 flight dates that match up with the ground truth data we have. And that's just a simple structure for motion, looking at the P95 and Pmax, which are the two percentiles of the point cloud data. And so to assess whether or not the UAS can correlate or shows the same thing that we had in the ground truth data, our methods of assessment are going to be just repeatability, how much genotypic variation can the UAS and the ground truth explain, and then we're going to look at the correlations between the two. So our first method of assessment is repeatability. We have our advanced tests on the top and then the three early evaluation hybrids below that. The biggest thing to take away from this is the numbers in bold for all four tests are the highest repeat. I mean, they're high repeatabilities across everything. I mean, the lowest one is 0.65 and 0.53 here, yes, but we go from 0.86 all the way up to 0.99 for repeatability, so that's amazing. And the best thing to know is that the P95, so that 95th percentile, tends to match the most with our ground truth data across the four dates shown here, so more so from early all the way up to July 21st, so after stem elongation. So repeatabilities are awesome. That's looking great. The Pmax, however, for some reason, you know, across all four showed the same trend. It was never the highest repeatability estimate. If we look at the next method of assessment, the amount of genotypic variation explained here by both ground truth and P95. On our y-axis, we have the percent of genotypic variation explained, which, if you'll note, on both methods starts off at 50%. So they're already explaining a lot of genotypic variation. And then on our x-axis, we have the days after planting, which correlate with those flight dates. In the ground truth, the three tests, the red line, black, and yellow, all showed the same trend as the P95 as being the highest genotypic variations explained, with our lead test coming in at the bottom for both tests. I mean, and that's explained because we have a lot less variation between the in the elite test than what we do in the early test for the top three. It is interesting to note, though, that right around day 60, if we look at our average days after planting for when these elite tests flower, it was around 70 days, and for some reason, right around then is when our UAV starts to decline. So I'm not sure if that's actually a relationship with flowering time, or if maybe there's just some bad data points there, cloudy days, overlap between plots. So that's something we'll look at in more detail later on. If we look at the last method of assessment, our Pearson correlations here, we have the elite test on here, and then one of the exotics, the one that has a lot of variation between plots. What we'll see is the correlations are lower with an overall mean of 0.54 in the elite test, but if we look at our exotic overall mean, we have 0.84. So there's a stronger Pearson correlation here in the exotic, I mean, compared to your elite, and then we see that across the other two exotic tests as well, overall means of 0.87 and 0.87. Similar trend is what we saw in the repeatabilities. Our Pmax was never the highest correlation. The P95 was. also with the genotypic variation, what we see here is a decrease as the season progresses in our correlations. So both ground truth, in the genotypic variation, the repeatabilities, and the correlations, we're seeing that similar trend. And so, you know, that's something that we're going to look at later on is why are we seeing this? Does it have to do with because it's at flowering? Is there a greater overlap in plots? And it's harder for the UAV to do that when you're mosaicing the images. Our repeatability estimates, like I said, are great. They're really high for both of them, so it seems to be validated really well. The genotypic variation remains moderate to high. I say moderate because if you remember, the elite test was only around 56% genotypic variation there. Our correlations, though, moderate again. If you remember, the elite overall was 0.54 for the mean, but our other exotic tests were 0.87 or higher. And then, like I said, we'll just continue to look at why do these correlations decrease and then why does the genotypic variation drop. So to go from there, what I'm going to look at later are, can we rank these genotypes? And that's really the importance to the breeder, is can the UAV and, you know, match what the ground truth does in saying this plant, this plot is taller than this plot or shorter than this plot. So that's something we'll look at. And then how does it compare with intermediate hybrids? You know, we looked at the early stage and we looked at later stages, but what about those in between there where you're making some more selections or continuing your hybrid evaluations? And then we only looked at rotary wing here. We have data for fixed wing. Can they see the same trends or do they have different trends? You know, the fixed wing flies at a lot higher altitude and faster speed, so maybe there's some effect from the UAV there. And then one other thing I'm really interested in is these yield parameters. We have data on head length and width from both ground truth. We're going to look at and see, can we correlate that with the UAV? Because that's really where the next big gains are at, is in yield parameters. And then we can, from images we've seen, we can count the number of panicles per plot. You know, can we relate that with all these other head parameters and hopefully get some yield estimations from that? And so with that, I'd like to thank the Sorghum Breeding Lab, my advisor, Dr. Carvajo, Ace Pugh, and then the UAS team at College Station, and then all of our founders at Geostat, Canvas, Tees, Corpus Christi, and Texas A&M AgriLife. So, open for any questions.